Yeah.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFO Undercover. Like Natasha says, I'm your host, Joe Montaldo. I hope everyone is having a great evening, a wonderful morning, a wonderful afternoon, wherever you may be on our beautiful blue planet, you know. And I know y'all have heard me say this many, many times. I truly love this show because it's truly international. We talk to people around the world, and we have listeners around the world, and it makes me happy every time I get to do this on Wednesday night. So I want to thank all the listeners for being here. There's a lot of plugs tonight, but we're going to get into that a little later in the show. This evening, I have Canadian researcher Grant Cameron with us. Grant is one of my all-time favorite researchers, and because Grant really does his homework. Y'all know how I am about homework, and he's one of the dozen or so out there that I truly think actually do their research, or they're working with somebody that's actually doing their research. I can't say that about everybody, but for the most part, there's a lot of good researchers out there, and Grant seems to be in the top of it. So, Grant, how are you doing this evening?
Not too bad, Joe. I enjoy being on your show. I've talked to you a few times and met you at a number of conferences. Always fun.
You segued me that in right here. I'll be speaking at the X Conference this year, which is the first conference I met you at.
Yes.
And, Stephen invited me to speak, I'll be speaking about MILAB. I don't know if you actually figured that one out yet. But,
yeah.
But, man, if you get a chance, I hope to see you. Well, before we get started, are you going to be anywhere in the U.S. anytime soon? Anywhere I can catch up with you?
I'm doing Ozark in April and Roswell in July. And then I have an engagement in Ireland in October. So
now,
those are my three upcoming lectures.
Ireland sounds fantastic. I was talking with Mary Roswell a couple of weeks ago. She was in Ireland just recently, and she's from England, but she had an absolute fantastic time in the way she described the place. I'm like, oh, God, I got to go.
Yeah, that's right. It's not a bad place to have to go if you got to go.
Now, the Ozarks I can probably catch up with you at, and I'm planning on being at Roswell this year because we'll be doing quite a lot of live broadcasting. But I don't know if I'll be at Roswell, but I know some of the network members will be there. But
yeah.
Ozark I was planning on going because I've never actually been to the Ozark.
Oh, you've never been. That's one of the best I've seen. It's sort of like a local thing. I think it's his 20th year this year. And if you take a look, I think they had about 600 people last year. There's probably 450 of them have been there almost every year. So it's one of these conferences where everybody goes back year after year after year. And they have the famous Lone Star Bar there in the parking lot where they serve the beer from Texas, the Lone Star Beer.
Yes.
And everybody, you get a bunch of people there, like Linda Howe and myself and a bunch of people sitting there at 2:00 in the morning and exchanging stories, and you're out in the middle of the parking lot, and it's quite the atmosphere that goes day and night, and sort of a little bit different than any conference you've been to. Sort of real down home, and a lot of people just talking to each other, and excellent conference.
I see. Now you sold me on it, but I think I talked to you a couple of years ago. You had told me about it, and I really wanted to attend. And the last couple of years, it's been picking and choosing which ones that I should be. Now, I got to be honest, not so much the ones I wanted to go to, but where my space should be at.
Yeah, and it's one of the cheaper ones. I think it's like, I don't know what Lou Farish, who runs it, I don't know what he charges. I think it's about $40 or $50 for the whole weekend. So it starts on a Friday, and Friday afternoon, and it runs till Sunday at lunchtime, and then everybody always goes to this, they have a hotel there that's supposed to be haunted. Everybody heads to the hotel there for the brunch, and it's quite the thing. Like Timothy Good comes every year, and I'm there most years, and Angela Joyner's coming back again this year from Stevensville, Texas, and I'm even bringing along. There was a sort of a this thing about Hillary Clinton about her drinking in Pennsylvania when she was campaigning there. She was drinking Canadian. Royal Crown whiskey, so I'm actually bringing a 40 ounce of Royal Crown along, and we're all going to toast Hillary Clinton in the parking lot. So,
oh Lord, I'm coming for sure. This sounds like somewhere I want to be, man. I'll definitely be up there. When is it?
It's April, whatever it is, April 9th, 10th, somewhere in there.
Oh God, that's 2 weeks before the X Conference, isn't it?
No, it's the week before the X Conference.
Oh, man.
So whatever the week before the X Conference.
Okay, I got to talk to my partner, see if he's mind that I'm going to be gone a couple of days.
Because I
wanted to go the last couple of years, but I ended up at I was going to go the year of the 60th for Roswell, But then we were asked to come down to Roswell. They actually let me speak down to Roswell, but they asked us to come down and work press, you know. And I was like, well, you know, when they ask, you got to kind of go. So,
yeah.
I went to that one, and then I went out to, I think it was Vegas. And then, so I didn't get to go last year. So, you know, I try to get to 3 or 4 a year. It's easier when they're letting me speak because it doesn't cost me as much. But, you know.
Yeah.
Even when not, I still try to get 3 or 4 a year because I just want to show my face and meet with people. I like talking with people like you and several others that I like to get FaceTime with. And
Well, that's the thing. If you want to meet people, that's the conference to go because there's a lot of this. They used to have it at the Laughlin conference. They used to have this thing that went on all night long in somebody's room, but I haven't seen that around for a couple of years. It used to be hosted by a woman from Sacramento or something. But that's where. The Ozark is sort of famous. They're having this bar in the parking lot where there's sometimes, you know, like 100 people standing out there at 2 o'clock in the morning and the music's going, people talking. It's quite the place to be.
Well, I know the ICAR members and the paranormal listeners can drink, so guys, come check it. Look, this is perfect. Y'all can come up to the Ozarks, chill out with Grant and I and a bunch of other people that are going to be there. Then y'all can come down next the following weekend and just hang out with me in D.C. at the X Conference. Look, this sounds like fun to me, guys. I might have to take the month off.
Yeah, that's right. That's the thing. You can sort of back-to-back a conference. I think that's why Steve sort of set it up. He's smart enough not to go in competition against Ozark, the week after Ozark.
Yeah, that would just be dumb in his case to do that. And I've got to be honest. Everybody I've ever heard went there. I've always heard good things about the Ozark conference.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I got to come, and especially if you're going to be there, the bar thing sounds like a blast.
And it's actually like I don't know if people know, but it's in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, which is just outside of Fayetteville, and it's a little tiny town. It's kind of a unique town. Like most people from Arkansas go there to get married. They have this haunted hotel, which used to be an old sanatorium, and then everything in the town either has to be 75 years old or look like it was built 75 years ago. So all the houses are all sort of Victorian type houses, and there's really nothing new looking in there. There's new buildings, but they all are built to look like they're 75 or 100 years old. So it's real quaint. It's up on top of a mountain, and it's a beautiful place to be.
Well, see, I'll feel right at home there. That would be like being in New Orleans. Everything here is ancient looking.
Yeah.
It will kind of be nice. And see, for me, the Ozarks is nothing. This is, I think, it's either 6 or 8 hour drive from me. It's not a very far drive. And so I'm kind of looking forward to that, and then, you know, D.C. I'll be flying out to, so I don't have to drive out there. Last time I drove to D.C., that was a nice little ride.
Yeah, D.C., that's the thing with D.C., you know, it's like a big ride from the airport, and there's lots of, you got to sort of plan it. Ozark, you just sort of show up, and people are showing, most people actually show up on the Thursday, because this bar starts on Thursday, so Thursday night it goes all night long, even before the conference starts, and that's the thing, is if you see, you know, 75 or 80% of your people coming back every year, it's kind of a thing that once you've been there, you're sort of like, oh man, I got to go back again. This is
Well, that speaks volumes for the conference that you've got so much repeat business.
So hopefully we'll see you there.
Oh, I'm gonna try like hell to be there. I really am. I mean, it sounds like a blast to me, and it's the weekend before X conference that I can probably, if you know, I'll check and see how long I drive it is, but I'll probably just drive up there and spend the weekend. And when we come up, you know, we'll probably pay for the conference, but usually when we come up as press, we don't pay for any of that stuff.
Yeah. But if it's, you know, $40, it's really nothing really major, and the hotels aren't all that expensive. There are motels. There aren't really no hotels.
Well, we figure when we're traveling like that, minimum $99 a night. But I usually, especially when we're traveling, unless you're in, like, Roswell or cheap, and a few other places you go to cheap, but other than that, we figure $99 a night. These days in the U.S., that's about what a decent hotel room costs.
Yeah. The only thing I found the disadvantage of Eureka Springs is you don't have an internet access there. They don't really have, you can't really log into your, and when you get into this, the internet addiction type thing where you're following your email and your websites and stuff, it gets a little bit bad when you're a couple days, you're sort of out of touch, eh?
Yeah, unless you're using SAT or something, you're pretty much out of touch.
Yeah.
And actually, though, somebody told me just recently, now this is for the really big-time internet junkies, okay, guys? You know y'all can buy a sat phone and get all the bells and whistles, but now there's a company that will rent you a sat phone over the weekend. Like if you want to go out in your boat or you travel and you're taking a vacation, you can rent it for a weekend, you can rent it for a month. It comes with full coverage, and you just tell them what areas you're going to be in and where you're likely to call, and they put that in the coverage plan. And usually, it's, you know, it's probably $100, $200 or something. But if you're an internet junkie and
yep.
you got to have your fix,
yep.
and
that's right.
There you go, guys. You hooked
exactly.
up. Okay. I mean, we do radio. That's why I found out about it. But at Ozark, we'll just do pre-records while we're down there with the different people and the different guests, and use it as filler material later on when we're putting the when people want to take off or stuff like that, or we got shows that are running behind or something. It's really good for us. So.
Yeah.
And the station can run on its own in the weekend. It don't have to have me to ask. That's kind of nice. It's weird that it's kind of like that, because the internet these days, everybody wants their internet. Huh?
Yeah.
So at least I know if I need a vacation from the internet, that's where we're going to go.
yeah.
No, it sounds like a lot of fun. Now, I've been getting all these emails over the last week about the Canadians releasing new information and new files,
yeah.
new documents. I've been getting a lot of emails, but I haven't been getting anything else. meaning, I don't know so much what it is they're releasing. Was there any good information in it? Is any pertinent information in it? Because a lot of times I see these countries dump a lot of stuff, but you might find one document out of 500. So I was wondering if that's the same thing, or if there's something good coming out, or do you know yet?
Well, actually, the story is really not even true. I'll tell you the whole story,
okay,
because I was involved with it 30 years ago. When I think the same sort of holds true for Britain particularly, and that is what happened. These documents were released 30 years ago out of Canada, and they involved the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, which is the federal police force.
Yeah.
It involves the National Research Council, which is the scientific branch of the government, and it also involves the Defense Department. And what happened was they released the vast majority of this stuff, and I haven't seen all the documents on the website, but I would say the vast majority of them were released 30 years ago. I remember as a young researcher, I went to Ottawa, and I went through these files, and I got the all the military stuff, the Wilbur Smith stuff, and that sort of stuff, and grabbed all this material. And then what happened is it's the Internet age. And so the Canadian archives, same as the U.S. archives, decides, you know, it's the Internet age, and we're going to put all our documents on the website. And the U.S. archives, or whether it's the CIA or FBI, you're going to put documents up. One of the documents you're going to, the stuff you're going to stick on is UFO stuff, because there's more requests for UFO documents from archives and government than any other stuff. That's what people want, so it's a very popular type of thing. So what they did, and this site that they're talking about actually went up. I talked about it at Ozark last year. I actually released the fact that they had this site up and these documents were on. This is last April I talked about this.
Damn.
Already. And I think the site's been up for maybe about a year and a half. And basically it's just the National Archives site, and they basically stuck not just UFO documents, but all sorts of documents. But you can search the UFO thing, and they've got these 9,500 pages of UFO stuff. And what it is, it's basically the same thing as Blue Book. It's sighting files. It's same as the British. There's no secret stuff, no top secret stuff, no big disclosure stuff. It's basically the stuff that has been collected as sighting files. And one of the other stories that sort of was associated with it that isn't true is they stated that the University of Manitoba, where I work, and where Chris Rakowski, a friend of mine, and it's very strange because both of us got into UFOs back in 1975, and Chris has written 4 books on UFOs, and so both of us have been very active in UFOs, both at the same university. And what happened was the government really didn't know what to do with the files, and so they started to dump this stuff. And what they did was Chris was very active, very interested. He was contacting them, so basically all the files from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, from the from the military, all go to Chris Rakowski now. And one of the reports that was coming out associated with this, all these stories about the big disclosure, which really didn't happen, was that the files are now being being stored and controlled by the University of Manitoba. And the University of Manitoba, I can absolutely guarantee you, because I know all the top people here at the university, have absolutely nothing to do with UFOs. This has nothing to do with just the fact that Chris Rakowski is getting them. And most of them now, they may be filing off stuff. Like something really big happens, they may be able to intercept that kind of stuff. But the vast majority of the Canadian sighting files now go to Chris Rakowski, who's just a private researcher. And I was even talking to him, I think it was yesterday morning, in University Center where I work, and I ran into him, and I was telling him, like, have you seen this stuff about the disclosure and how this thing's all been sort of distorted and, you know, just, I don't know where the heck they got this from. and he was sort of laughing, and he actually showed me a report that he'd gotten from the Defense Department that morning, and it had UFO report, and it had Defense Department on the top and stuff, and it had been faxed to his line at the University of Manitoba, and he was saying, I'm going to have to definitely, because all this stuff is going to affect the university, I'm going to have to get a line outside the university. And it was basically, it looked like it was a sighting of a meteorite, and somebody had described this, you know, and it looked like it was a meteorite report. Same sort of thing, just very basic sighting reports and stuff like that. So the stuff that has been released has been out for a long time, and like the CIA who put their UFO documents on the website, the Canadians have done the same thing. So it's not a disclosure, it's just the Canadians are dumping this stuff. They're putting it up because it's very popular type stuff on their website. And I've worked on this quite a bit, and I think the conclusion I've sort of come to now, and I really sort of drew to this conclusion by two things. I had a breakfast last year at the X conference with Paul Hellyer, and I'd written some stuff about Paul Hellyer, and he was the former Minister of Defense in Canada. And he had given a speech in 1967 where he talked about the fact that the Canadian government had opened a UFO base in 1954 for UFOs to land. And I knew the other side of the story because it involved Wilbur Smith, and I had that side of the story. So we had, and this is many, many years ago, before Hellyer ever became vocal on UFOs, we were talking to Hellyer, me and another researcher, and this was going back 20 years, we're trying to get him to say, where did you get this information in 1967 in the speech that you made about the government opening the base? And he said, well, there was a guy in the Department of Defense who was the UFO guy, and he had it, and I can't remember the guy's name. And I guess I put on the website, I put, you know, oh, how can you believe this? Hellyer's got to be, you know, he's got to be lying. He can't be telling the truth. How can you forget some guy's name that's the UFO expert? And so I remember I had breakfast. Hellyer wanted to have breakfast with me. And I don't know if you've ever met him. He's a real tall guy. He's a huge guy. And so he comes down for breakfast, and he's got these documents under his arm. And he starts off the conversation by saying, Mr. Cameron, I've been many things in my life, but one of the things I'm not is a liar. And I'm going, holy shit, what a right. You know, suddenly I'm realizing, you know, I must have put something on the website. He's upset about this. And I had breakfast with him for, I guess, 45 minutes, and he showed me these documents. And basically they were from 1967. And I said, well, yeah, this is 1967. This is when the Canadians started to dump this stuff in 1967. And I said, well, this is nothing unusual. And, you know, this is just ordinary sighting type stuff from the National Research Council and their discussion about stuff like that. And at the end of the breakfast, I was thoroughly convinced that Paul Hellyer, and he said it openly, but when I had this long conversation with him, he absolutely knew nothing. He was the Minister of Defense, and he had no interest in the UFO phenomena. He didn't know anything about it, and had seen some sighting reports and stuff, but really nothing was happening. And so that, combined with John Alexander, who's now running around talking about the fact that he's saying that he'd said at X conference, he made that speech last year, and he made a speech at the Crash Saucer conference where he was talking about the same sort of thing, and he was on Coast to Coast where he talked about it. And basically he said that his long tenure in the government trying to find out what was going on, his conclusion was that there are people in the government who are interested in the phenomena, and that would include people like, he didn't mention, but it would include people like Bill Clinton and people like that. Jimmy Carter, who are interested, but there's no institutional support for UFOs inside the government. And I sort of have sort of come to that conclusion that these guys actually may be right, that the government really, one of the reasons why the secrecy is the government really doesn't know what's going on. The elected government basically is out of the loop. So if you go and you're, like, there's all this stuff now about Barack Obama. He's got to disclose. Let's get Barack Obama to disclose. Well, Barack Obama doesn't seem to have interest, but even if Barack Obama did have an interest, it's like Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton said quite categorically on a number of occasions, openly, he tried to get to the bottom of the thing, and he couldn't get anywhere. So the elected government really doesn't know what's going on. Now, who's controlling it, whether it's some government inside the government that Bill Clinton talked about at one time, or a cabal, or sort of an international group, or whatever this thing is, who's got the information, but it definitely isn't in the government. So if you get the Canadians, or the Americans, or the British, and you go after the government, they are maybe just as interested in getting this stuff out as you and I, but they've got nothing to disclose. So when they do disclose the stuff they've got, they're disclosing everything they've got. And the Canadians have put 9,500 pages on a website, the National Archives website, but it's basically all they have, which is the stuff that we don't really want. It's the sighting reports, it's the garbage, it's the stuff that filters in the stuff that's been filtered off to wherever it's going, the crash stuff, all that kind of stuff, the government doesn't have control of, and the government, as John Alexander, and I'm starting to think maybe John Alexander's right, John Alexander says the truth is that the government doesn't know what's going on, and that, I think, may be true. And that's supported, I don't know if I've ever told you this story, there was I was leaked a document. Very rarely in my UFO career have I ever been leaked a document, which really made me wonder, you know, whether I was out of the loop or whether, you know, nobody really cared what I was doing. And there was one document that was leaked to me, and this was a document that had to do with the UFO working group. This was a New York Times reporter who had done this book. I can't remember what it was called, but it was written in the 1980s. It was by an investigative reporter for the New York Times. He had been contacted by somebody from the National Security Council talking about, a National Security Agency talking about the fact that there was this UFO working group. So the rumored story was always that John Alexander ran this UFO working group. So I was leaked this document, and the document was a handwritten note, and I'm not allowed to release it until the guy dies. It was the guy's, one of the people at this group. And the group is basically the Avery. It's John Alexander, Putoff, Pandolfi, all these guys who have been the Avery over the years have been together. A lot of these guys were at this group, and what it was the cover page was typed, and the cover page was top secret restricted, no declassification on it, whatever, and the rest of the document, which was about 17 or 18 pages, was handwritten notes that this guy had taken at one of the weekend sessions, and it took place clean room or in a vault in Washington, D.C., and it was a building. It was a certain building. So anyway, and the I released this, I guess, about 3 years ago at the Ozark Conference, and I put not the first cover page. I just put part of the cover page, which basically described where I showed enough of the document to show where this meeting took place, that it was top secret restricted, and I said that it was called the Advanced Physics Theoretical Working Group. And then last year, John Alexander stands up at the X Conference, he makes a speech, and he says, I ran a group, and he goes through the whole story, and he said it was called the Advanced Physics Theoretical Working Group. And the reason that they called it was so that people couldn't get it through a Freedom of Information Act request. And John Alexander makes a speech, and everybody is now challenging John Alexander that he's sort of the deep, dark guy that's covering the whole thing up. And John Alexander says he has really not discovered anything. He's basically making the case that the government, there's people in the government who are interested, but they really haven't gotten anywhere, and the government itself doesn't have any institutional interest. And that's exactly what this document shows. Now, I may show more of the document. I may sort of type out, because I don't want people to see the handwriting, but I may type out what they had. And basically, this 18 pages, it goes from subject to subject. It had cattle mutilations. It had the famous Elmwood, Wisconsin UFO sightings where the two CIA agents had gone. All this was in there, and different just UFOs in general. All these different topics. And basically, it was worse than UFO 101. There was absolutely nothing. It was just ridiculous. They were just sort of discussing it like people on the street. And these were people like Putoff and Alexander and stuff. And that sort of backed up, this is a document I've seen that other people haven't seen, that backs up John Alexander's story, that here's all these guys, and the way that the New York Times had put it out was that all these guys were working on this, and they had all these top secrets, and they were the government, and they were getting to the bottom of this thing. They got nowhere. They knew nothing, according to this document. And something like you would find at a UFO conference at the bar, people just talking about rumors and stories, and they really hadn't got anywhere. So it sort of backed up what John Alexander is now saying. And this is a document that I've got, that I've seen, an inside document, which showed a bunch of top secret or people who had clearances, like Bob Wood was on the group. All these people who had interest in the UFO phenomenon, none of them are denying that. Pandolfi, all these people. But really, when you take a look at the document, the 18 and 19 pages, really weren't getting anywhere in terms of answers. So that's, to make a long story short, when you get these disclosures, and the question is, like, why would the British not really release the top secret stuff, the secret stuff? Why don't the Canadians release it, or the Danish, or whoever's releasing this stuff? Is because you're talking about the elected government who don't control it, and all they're releasing is what they've got, and what they've got is the sighting files. The real stuff is going someplace else.
Yeah, and I get in trouble. At least you don't get in trouble for saying that kind of stuff. I get in trouble when I say that. About any, because most of the files I've read, and that's why I wanted to ask you about this, and you see, I didn't have any clue. I got to say, in the last, the last 4 or 5 days, I literally have gotten a couple of hundred emails about these new files, and I'm like, well, how come I haven't heard about this on TV or from any of the ufologists, and I'm hearing this from all the, you know, just the listeners and stuff like that, so that's why I asked when you came on, and that actually made perfectly good sense to me now, but yeah. I didn't even know about those, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I remember going, I mean, and I was a young kid at the time, I mean, I was going through these National Research Council files, because we I'd been involved in the FLAP in 1975, and there was a bunch of sightings, so I wanted to see what sightings they had, and they had quite a few from that FLAP. And they would, you know, the clown from the National Research Council would say, oh, this is a plane coming out of Winnipeg. You know, it's this blue book, typical blue book stuff. So I remember all these stuff. Now, 9,500 pages is an awful lot of pages of documents.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can't discount the fact that the Canadians were interested. They're gathering a lot of stuff. And this only goes up to, I think these files go from 50-something to 1980. And that's about when Stanton Friedman was one of the guys who was forcing these documents out. And that was in 1978, 1979. Stanton Friedman was behind forcing these documents out. And then the RCMP released theirs a little bit later. But that's why when you see the release of these things, they talk about up to 1980. So these things have been around since 1980. But all the files since 1980, at least for the last 10 years, have been coming to Chris Rakowski. And he files them as his, he puts them, he doesn't put the sighting files, but he releases his annual UFO report of how many UFO sightings, and it's in the hundreds every year, and these are all coming through the same channels. They're coming through the Canadian government, but you can, when you see this kind of stuff, and when he showed me this one yesterday morning, it was like, you know, the basic government really doesn't care. They're sending it to him, and he even gets into difficulties because people file Freedom of Information Act requests, and he doesn't work for the government, and he's getting these files, and so then he says, well, you know, what should I do? You know, this guy wants a Freedom of Information Act request, and he's actually photocopying documents, people wanting stuff, and actually sending it to people, and he doesn't even work for the government. He's just a private guy like you and I, and just a place where they knew the files wouldn't sort of get thrown in the garbage, and this guy's interested, so let's send him all the files. And that's what the Canadian government's doing. And that's why I'm saying that if there's something good, you're not going to see it in those files. And if, like a lot of people say that, you know, the British are releasing the files, the Canadians are releasing files to force the Americans' hand on the thing. Well, if they wanted to release the Americans' hand and force the Americans to play ball and release their stuff, he would release the top-secret stuff, secret stuff.
Yeah.
But the elected government, it's just the same in the Americans, the same all over the place. The elected government is only there for 4 years or 8 years, and there are people that sometimes you really can't trust them. You know, Barack Obama with his terrorist friends, or Bill Clinton, you know, with, you know, his background or stuff. That, you know, Stephen Greer always said they do psychological profiles on these guys, and if they can't trust you, they're not going to tell you.
No, they're
so,
not. And I really don't think probably the last president. Actually, if anybody knew in the last 30 years, 40 years, it's probably Daddy Bush.
Yeah.
He might have told Reagan something. I don't even think they told Baby Bush, to be honest with you. He might have known a little something, but really I think Bush Sr. is probably the last guy who really knew as far as in the circle of politics go, I should say.
Yeah. And then some people, like I've gone back and forth, and now when people ask me, does the president know, I say, well, I can give you the facts that show that he knows, I can give you the facts that show that he doesn't know. Because there seems to be, like, a lot of information on both sides. And one of the more credible pieces of information that says that the president really hasn't known for a long time, and that's Edgar Mitchell. And I was in contact with Edgar Mitchell, and I said, are you sure? Like, what are your sources? He wouldn't tell me who his sources are. And I said, do you trust your sources? You know, are your sources high enough up that they would actually know whether the president was briefed or not? And basically he said, no, not since Kennedy. And that's Edgar Mitchell. So when a guy like Edgar Mitchell, who has some contacts that you and I don't have, is saying nobody since Kennedy has really known and been told the truth, you got to sit there and say, well, maybe this is true. Maybe the government is completely out of the loop. And so that's what I've been spending a lot of my time now, is trying to figure out. And I went up the chain of command. I tried to go up to the Canadian government, to Eric Walker, and up to the presidents, and trying to figure out who the heck's got control of this thing. Who knows what's going on? And now, you know, I'm sort of doubting that the president knows. So now we start looking at another level and saying, well, who's actually running the government. So like Bill Clinton, when this famous statement where Sarah McClendon came and said to him, the White House reporter, Mr. Clinton, why don't you do something that these UFO people want? Why don't you release this stuff? And he said, Sarah, there's a government inside the government, and I don't control it. And now that's what I'm, you know, when Bill Clinton says something like that, you got to take it seriously. And I sort of start looking at who actually is government inside the government. And, you know, it's kind of a joke, but maybe it's true. Maybe the U.S. government isn't really running the show. There's somebody behind the scenes running what's going on.
Oh, no, there's something out there. There's, you know, because people tell me that all the time. I said, no, it's not the government that y'all think of. It's not our government. It's not the elected government that's doing this. These are people, a lot of them probably put in power 30, 40 years ago.
Sure.
And are holding on to this tight. And that's why when they tell me about disclosure, I'm like, it's not going to happen, guys. I said, maybe 40, 50 years from now, but it's not going to happen now.
Yeah.
I said, there's no reason to disclose. There's a push. Don't get me wrong. There's a push in the U.S., but not. I don't see 310 million Americans out there protesting the streets telling me, let's see UFOs, because we would know.
And that's what it'll come down to. Like any other social issue or political issue, when the pressure's on, everybody will line up behind the issue and say, I was always there and I'm supporting it.
Yep, but as of now, I don't see any. I know there's a few politicians that have an interest in this, but and I know there's some other interests inside our government and Congress and Senate, but there's not enough to really change anything. And I don't think Barack has any interest in it. I don't even think he wants to go there.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, somebody said, well, he hired John Podesta as his team, you know, to bring him from one to bring him into office, but. I said, yeah, but that has nothing to do with UFOs, guys. And I said, I don't think Podesta's out there saying anything to Barack about UFO secrecy.
Yeah.
I said, I just don't think he is. I said, I don't think he's going to jeopardize his career. Didn't do it.
Yeah, like people will talk about the fact that he did bring in Podesta, who is, you know, in favor of openness and openness on everything, not just UFOs.
Yeah, on everything, yeah.
And then Hillary Clinton, but the people won't tell the other side of the story that the key, like Barack's story of bringing these people in was he wanted to be like Lincoln and have, you know, a united, bring in your adversaries, your people running mates, to like Lincoln did, and that was his idea. But the main, if you're going to do UFO disclosure and you're going to bring in the UFO people like Hillary and Podesta, the main UFO guy you're going to bring in is Dennis Kucinich. And Dennis Kucinich had a close encounter, not just a sighting. He had a close encounter where they drew diagrams and, you know, he heard voices. It was just a really, when you talk to the Wall Street Journal guy, this is an unbelievable sighting that he and a bunch of people had, two other witnesses had. Well, why wouldn't you bring in Dennis Kucinich? Because Dennis Kucinich, when he made light of the fact that he had seen the UFO, was absolutely deluged and just hammered in every newspaper in America about what being a wacko and a crazy. And even Dennis Kucinich ran for the hills and suddenly said, oh, it's just a UFO, let's not get upset, you know, I didn't say it was extraterrestrial, it's unidentified, you know, get with it. And he ran from the thing, and he was supposed to, Shirley MacLaine, where the house where he was saw this UFO in Washington, Shirley MacLaine was going to produce the files, the drawings and the diagrams that he and the bodyguard and the girlfriend had drawn of this close encounter. This thing was sitting over the swimming pool right outside the house, and that this thing event had been going on all day. And of course, they didn't produce the files because Kucinich was running. He said, "No, we're not going to go with this. We're not going to elaborate." So, if you want UFO disclosure, why would you not bring in the top UFO guy into your cabinet? Because Dennis Kucinich is bad news. I mean, Kucinich was upset. Why was I not given a position? I'm one of his rivals in the Democratic. I'm the guy that gave him the big boost in Iowa to win Iowa, and he's upset. But because it's still an issue, even though it may be the most important issue in the world, it's still an issue that has a great deal of bad baggage with it.
It is, too. It's a shame, but you know, because I get that question all the time. Well, Hillary, you know, Hillary. I said, Hillary's not going to do anything, guys. I said, Hillary is Secretary of State now, and she is not going to get laughed out of her position over UFOs. I said, don't. I said, she may poke and prod for her own personal use because she's got some power now. I said, but other than that, don't think she's going to tell y'all. I said, somebody said, well, she'll just come out on the radio one day or TV and say, I found the truth. I said, no, she won't.
Yeah. The one thing, that when people are talking about Hillary, the other thing you got to remember is if you look at my website, the Hillary stuff, you'll see that the real story about Hillary was Hillary was working on a document for the president. She was helping Lawrence Rockefeller edit this document on UFO disclosure for the president. And Rockefeller was putting a lot of pressure. Rockefeller gave some money to the Clintons and was a powerful guy. But when it all came down to it, it came down to August of 1995, when Rockefeller sat Hillary and Bill Clinton down at his ranch, at the KY Ranch in Wyoming, and sat there and talked to them about UFOs. And the story, according to Whitley Strieber, according to what Lawrence Rockefeller had told him, was that the president and Hillary said nothing during this whole Rockefeller deal, talking about UFOs and how important it is and this has got to be disclosed. And the next morning, Hillary came to Rockefeller and said, okay, we've listened to you, now don't ever bring up the subject again. And that's the end of the true story of Hillary, is that Hillary may have realized, I'm going to run for president, and I don't need this, and basically told Rockefeller, we've listened to you, now shut up, I don't want to hear about this UFO stuff anymore. Even though she may be interested, she knows the backside of this issue.
Yeah, and she's career-minded,
career-oriented,
and, you know, that's one everybody tells me. I said, guys, these politicians aren't going to ruin their careers. And they're like, well, no, if the truth's out, they don't understand, first off, most people just don't understand the implications of the truth of extraterrestrials, but the day that any government admits the fact that they've been lying to us about extraterrestrials, there's big consequences, guys.
Sure. And the other big issue that when people talk about Barack, the story that I've started to put out now that people got to realize, Barack was given his first briefing, intelligence briefing, 2 days after the election. So on November the 6th, he started to get the top secret briefings. And you remember during the campaign, he was talking about, you know, Bush and all the secrecy and all the bad stuff Bush had done and the war and this and that and whatever. And so he gets his first briefing. Now that's November, December, January, February. That's 3 months ago.
Yeah.
He started getting the intelligence briefings. What has Barack Obama disclosed about anything?
Yeah,
not just UFOs, nothing about anything. In fact, there's now articles starting to come out, and the ACLU and different people are starting to attack Barack because he's starting to defend Bush positions on different terrorism issues that the Justice Department had taken during the Bush administration. And he's defending his Justice Department is defending these positions. So people forget that once you become president, then suddenly it's your CIA, it's your war in Iraq,
it's
your National Security Council, and suddenly it's your secrets. And Barack has released no secrets about anything. He didn't come out and say, oh, you know that leader that died in whatever country? That was us. That was, you know, it's terrible. Bush killed the guy. He's completely secretive about everything that's happened. He's not released anything, not just UFOs. To expect him to come out and release the biggest secret, I think is a long shot when he's basically not released any secrets about anything.
Yeah, well, I noticed since he got in office, he's been doing a lot of eating crow. But that's you know, when you campaign that hard against something, you know, a lot of times. Well, you notice that's when I found that he dyed his hair was after that briefing. I had seen him. This is so funny. And actually, my wife caught this. We had seen him 2 days after the briefing. His hair was almost snow white. Matter of fact, I taped the thing on my thing, and. About a week passed by, because, you know, you see that a lot with presidents like Clinton and them. A lot of times they were brown-headed, and all of a sudden they're just white-headed. So I thought it was thinking, I said, well, he's like the rest of the presidents, you know, they done told him something, and he's white-headed. And I noticed 2 days after that he was on CNN, and his hair was brown again. I'm like, look at this, SOB dyes his hair. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I've never seen a president dye their hair before. I'm not saying it's a bad or a good thing. It just caught me for a loop, man. It threw me for a loop. But then, you know, but I've seen him a couple of times, you know, like, they were talking today about how Michelle said about Bush's $600 a year and how she was giving him hell about it. Now they're giving us $1,300 a week, $13 a week, which is $676.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, and then the helicopter thing. Obama came out so hard against Bush and the helicopters. Now, you know, he's like, oh shit, I need these helicopters.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
I kind of feel for him in some ways because, you know, I don't think he realized what he was getting himself into, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I've seen very few presidents that have that dumbfounded look on their face after the first 2 weeks in office, and it's usually presidents that really did not have a clue what was going on. And I think he came to some rude awakenings in his first 2 or 3 weeks in office, but hey.
Yeah, it looks easy when you're on the outside, but then you get in there and you realize. I always said, like, you could almost put like a puppet in the wooden puppet in the president's seat, and everything's just going to keep running the way it does now.
Yeah, it is, because if you remember, he said we're going to get out of Iraq, we're going to get out of Afghanistan, we're not putting no more troops in. He said that many times. Well, we're sending more troops to Afghanistan, and we're not getting out of Iraq until 2011, and then we're not even getting out fully.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm like, you know, everything, basically everything he said in his campaign now has come to pass to be, well, I was wrong, and he was. But that's because I really, you know, he was a junior senator. Come on, he didn't even have a year's experience in politics. And
yeah.
we made him president. Every time I think about that, I want to slap somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking, what can y'all expect, guys? He really didn't know it. But what's funny to me is he doesn't seem to have any interest in ufology at all. I know a couple of people have tried to get across to him. We've gotten, Stephen Bessette had been on the show a couple of times about the Million Facts on Washington.
Yeah.
And I have more than 4,000 people that wrote in and said they had either emailed or sent in or faxed a letter to Washington.
Yeah.
And I know Stephen's had a few, and somebody, who was it, Darren or Dow, somebody had talked to somebody over the coast and said that, you know, they had a couple thousand, too, that they know had went in. So I'm figuring he's probably gotten 15 to 25,000 either emails or letters, which isn't a lot when you think about the 300 million people in America.
Yeah.
But still, it should be enough to get your attention. You know what? I don't think he cares. I think he's thinking, look, guys, I got way bigger problems than this. I got economy. You know, I got problems all over the place. I'm trying to get $800 million, and everybody said, you know, all economists said I shouldn't. He's got real problems. So
yeah.
I don't I don't think he has time to deal with the UFO thing. Now, a friend of mine yesterday made a point, maybe he'll disclose to take some of the pressure off of him about some of the decisions he's got to make in the upcoming years, but I don't think so. I think that'll just make things worse.
Yeah, but John Alexander uses that argument, too. He said, like, if the government controlled the UFO situation, Bush would have disclosed near the end of his... He was in so much trouble, they would have disclosed in order to turn the polls. And he said it would only have taken 4 or 5 percentage points that you would have made something. If they had that kind of power to do something to switch the polls, they would have used it. And
oh, yeah.
They didn't use it because they didn't have it.
Well, that's like all these conspiracy people, but they tell me all the time, oh, the government has these mind control projects that they can do this and they can do... I said, look, I'm going to tell you this, and I've said this 100 times on the air. I said, if our government had the type of mind control that most Americans think they have,
there
would be no more wars in this planet. We wouldn't be fighting over there. We would have just brainwashed whoever we wanted, and that would have been the end of it, and we'd have went over to Iraq, and we'd have had Saddam working for us. You know, he'd have been, oh, yeah, we love Americans. And same
sure.
thing with Putin in Russia. We'd have just said, okay, hey, look, you know, you've been zapped. Especially when they start talking about, you know, ELF and ultra-low frequency and different types of projections, and then... When you really start getting into what they're doing with the military abductions, if they had that kind of ability, they would definitely use it on those people, and they don't.
Oh yeah, exactly. You
know, they're limited in what they can do, and it makes me crazy. But you know, we're not as advanced as we're advanced. We're just not as advanced as people would like to think.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is military just throwing out these kind of things to throw off the opposition that the other countries think that you've got stuff that you don't have,
yeah.
and you keep them off balance. Because it is true. I mean, if you
and
had the technology
money, yeah.
that they have for abductions, so you could get into someone's head, you just go to Bin Laden and say, I'm Allah, and I want you to bow down to the Americans, and you're wrong and stuff. But none of that has happened. And I think I'm almost exactly the same on the page as you, because people were talking about it, and I said, you know, if they have these technologies, when they had the war in Iraq, they were carpet bombing with B-52s. Like, this is 1960s technology. Why are you carpet bombing Iraq if you've got all this technology? This is insane. They simply don't have that kind of technology.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I know that Americans want to think that we're way more advanced than we are, and I get in trouble all the time for saying we're not. But
yeah.
I mean, I think we're quite a bit more advanced than most of the world, but we're not like flying UFOs all over the place, guys. And we're advanced. I mean, the F-22 is advanced, and now the F-35 is advanced. I'm not gonna lie, they're very advanced. Those A-10s. Black Triangles that we're flying around, those small ones, are advanced, but they're not advanced like people want to think they are. I mean,
yeah.
the drive systems are advanced, and whatever they're using for power is advanced. It's not something that's stock that we're using every day, but it's not stable enough or it's not good enough, it would already be being deployed in regular everyday life. Because that's one thing our government is good for. When they find a technology that works, that can drive an economy in our country, man, we instantly incorporate it. And even if it's Velcro or pins or whatever it is, it doesn't even
yep.
matter. Computers, Internet, Internet was originally designed so that the Pentagon could talk to its people in the field and around the world. It was never
that's
intended
right.
for us to use it.
Yep.
But
yep.
they said, well, wow, you know what? This is a really cool thing that everybody will like it. So,
yeah.
you know, so
yeah.
those kind of things, I know our government will incorporate a lot of that stuff because it's to their benefit to do so. So that tells me, you know, I think that they keep the American public, I know the think tanks say we're 50 years behind them. I'm figuring more like 15 or 20. And maybe I'm wrong. I mean, it might be a little further than that, but I really don't think the public's that much further behind than our government. I think it used to be that way.
Yeah.
And I think there are some gaps here and there where there's some places that the government's way ahead of us. But in general, I don't think they're all that much further ahead of us.
Yeah. And the other thing I think people forget, or that I've started to realize, and the more I look at it, the more I think it's true, is that the UFOs are farther and farther ahead. Like, people sort of make this sort of claim that, you know, they've got this drive and they the Americans have developed it and they've got all this technology. But UFOs is like anything else in science, whether it's you know, looking out in outer space or whether it's looking through a microscope. The more you look at it, the more complex it gets. And that's the way ufology is. If you look at the UFOs and you look at the technology that seems to be involved, the longer we go along, like you look at what we believed about UFOs in the 1950s and what we believe now in terms of the technology that they have and the mind control and this sort of stuff, it seems it's more and more advanced, more and more that the spread is wider, that we really, one of the maybe the reasons this disclosure and nothing's really gaining ground is that the government really has no concept of how they're abducting people, how the cattle mutilations take place, what the technology is, that it may be just so far out there that you're just making stories up to try to, make people think that you have it under control.
Yeah.
But that really, we're really nothing under control. And I've always said, one of the things in ufology, I remember I talked to Linda Howe at Ozark about
this.
And that is that there's that if you look back in ufology, there's actually sort of a pattern of how UFOs have sort of shown themselves. That it's a changing phenomena. That I remember back when I first started, there was and Ted Phillips, who's always at Ozark, talks about these landing trace cases. I remember you can hear Stanton Friedman talking about, you know, they have these landing trace cases. There's 4,000 of them. This is hard evidence, and people should look at this. There's been no landing trace cases for years. And I talked to Ted also. I said, Ted, is this right? And he said, yeah, that's right. It's just, there's no phenomenon. It just died out. And you take a look at, I remember back when I was doing the Carmen flap, the sightings in 1975 here where I lived, I ran across the stories that were popular. And I had one where you have these little aliens walking around in suits, and they're gathering up rocks and plants and stuff. And I actually had a guy who I tracked down 5 years after he had this sighting. And I think it happened in 1972, and he's talking about this little guy with the rod going through the ditch, and his girlfriend's in the car, and he tells this bizarre story about running into this little alien. Well, you don't get aliens running around with little rods anymore, and you get the crop circles come, and then you get the grays aren't there, and then they suddenly appear in 62 and make themselves known. And it's a phenomena that as you look through year after year, that different things are happening. It's almost like the aliens are sort of unfolding it the way they want it to be unfolded, and they're sort of controlling what's actually happening. And that's part of the story, is that if there's disclosure, the aliens can disclose anytime they want. And the aliens aren't disclosing, and there must be a very good reason why they aren't just making themselves known.
You know why? Because they've already disclosed everybody they want to disclose. I tell that to people all the time. I say, look, they're contacting the people they want to talk to. As far as the rest of us that aren't being contacted, they don't really care. You know, I don't think they care one way or another if we know. They're not going to bother to tell us, though, because they're talking to who they want to talk to, whether it's people in the government or just everyday contactees. They're contacting. Because as far as I can see, there's nothing we can do to stop contact. But it's interesting you brought that up about the trace cases, because about 14 years ago I introduced a new theory about 8 lashes longer than that. We had gone from having missing time cases left and right, to all of a sudden, we weren't getting missing time. And even today, we get very, very few missing time cases because what we've learned, especially with the grays, is the grays learn and they adapt.
Yeah.
We found out that all of a sudden, that you can call it gain time or even time. The way we found out about it is we started having contactees that were coming back, right, with full beards or 3 weeks' worth of hair growth on women's legs. Well, you know that doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of these women said, you know, well, Joe, I shaved my legs. Oh, hello, Grant? Grant? Oh, guys, ladies and gentlemen, I think we lost Grant. I'm not sure what happened there. We'll be back in a few minutes. Let me go find Mr. Grant, and we'll be back when I find him. About 10 minutes, guys. See you on it.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to UFO Undercover. Like Natasha says, I am your host, Joe Montaldo. So, guys, I don't know what's up with Grant's phones and our phones tonight. I don't want to blame it on Grant because I just think it's one of those weird phenomena. He's back on the line with us, so we're back. We're not exactly sure what happened, but I called him right back. He was right back, and I said, well, we'll go to break, and I said, let me get a cup of coffee. I'll come back. He was gone. So, I'm not exactly sure what's going on. So if we lose him, guys, have a little patience. We'll get him back. It's just kind of weird. Now, I don't know what we were even talking about before we started having weirdo problems.
I don't even remember what it was about. It wasn't anything serious, I don't think.
I don't think it was. I think we were behaving ourselves. I don't think we're saying that this president or that, maybe, you know, we were saying that we didn't think Barack was all that smart. So that,
or they had the technology, and then they used the technology on it.
You know, he might be going, he might have one of those things, yeah, keyword, not smart Barack. All right, kick him off the air. No, we're just kidding out to anybody who's listening. We're just teasing. We're just playing around. Now, you know, because it was so funny about that, when you were telling me about those documents, I got to thinking about it at the break, and I'm like, you know, it's amazing to me how something can get on the Internet, get spread around like that, and no one do their homework to find out why the hell. Because, see, I knew I was going to talk to you, so it was easy for me. I just asked you. I figured I'd just ask you and save myself some research. But I'm just surprised that no one went and looked around and seen what this was before they bothered to start emailing half of you.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest chain letter things I've ever seen. I even got a phone call from some guy, tracked me down through my website from Washington, was phoning me and asking about this, and it was just like it just instantly across, and it's almost we're desperate for stories, and the disclosure thing has gotten so much press lately, and it just sort of some of these issues, like I think it was the Danish released a couple weeks ago, and it was only a couple pages they released, but people sort of have gotten into this disclosure that there's something going to happen. And the story just fit in. It was like, oh, now the Canadians have done it. And instead of people checking it, people just wrote these major articles. And I think through this these two newspapers, there's the Denver one. I don't know if you've seen all. You probably know about all that, where they found a way to like I do Google have Google alerts. That's how I keep track of a lot of stuff. And these stories are on there every day. And they've managed to get these stories where they get picked up by the Google searches. So I think that sort of helps it along, that these, like Weber is writing some stories in Sala, and this stuff goes all over the world very fast now. And I think even today they said, they were talking about their ratings on the Internet, and they, I can't remember who said it, but they said, we are now the news media. And it's sort of like they have figured a way to get these stories spread fast and wide. And which is okay, and that's what you want. You that's what I always said. You got to put the pressure on the government. But in terms of these types of things, you've got to check it before you put it out, because it's hard to take it back. And now it's spreading around, and you can't stop it. It's all over the place. And I just couldn't believe my email box is just jammed with this story. And I was like, oh, again, like, my goodness.
Well, the advantage is to knowing, I just cut through the BS.
Yeah.
But anybody listening tonight now will know about it, and hopefully some of these people that are listening tonight will go out there and start, you know, rebutting some of them and say, hey, no, guys, this is what happened, this is what was going on.
Yeah, it is something to go, I mean, to go to the Canadian Government Archives, National Archives, and look at the documents. There's a lot of documents. It's kind of interesting to look at. But it would be the same as the CIA put their UFO documents up. And you know, they were out before, and again, it's how many people are researching and how many people are just sort of picking up a story and then taking their email list and forwarding the story on. And I think that's what's happening here.
It's getting crazy out there, and I gripe and complain about this all the time. I can't use the B word anymore since we're in Anthony. Oh, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, anyone listening to us in New Orleans on 105.3, I hope you're enjoying the programming tonight. Even though it is lightning, storming, thundering, and generally being nasty outside, I hope y'all are enjoying the program. I always forget to plug them in there, Grant. That's, you know, because I like our FM audience now tonight. And for my friends, now wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen, you always gripe and complain. Y'all, you can't hear us, you can't do this. Why can't I hear you in my car? Why can't I hear you on my airplane? Well, guess what? You can, all right? You can hear here, Grant and I, anywhere on planet Earth that can get a cell phone, you can now dial, go into UpSnap, go over to Paranormal Radio website, dial the toll-free number, type in 2899. It doesn't cost anything, okay? Nothing. You can listen to us anywhere on planet Earth now, okay? No excuses, no fusses, no messes. We're in FM in the South, and we're also on a couple of AM stations in the South. UFO on the cover's on several AM stations now. But you can listen to us anywhere like that. You can listen to us on the Internet, on God knows. I think we're on 40 different podcasts right now, and at least we have at least 11 of our own broadcast servers on the Internet now. So, you know, UpSnap, Ustream, Shoutcast, Winamp, Live 365. There's a bunch of other ones besides that. A lot of them are listed on the site. Look, don't have any excuse. We're the most easily accessed radio station probably ever on the Internet. So,
right on.
You know, get out there, pay attention, listen. And you know, the car thing is cool as hell. I got to say, Grant, because I'll be traveling a lot of times. And if I happen to be out of the South where I can't pick up the station on AM or FM, I can flip open my cell phone, type in the number, hit the station code, and bam, I can hear how the station sounds. And you know what? And it actually comes in quite nice and crisp. So it's a cool little feature. And it doesn't give now, and it also takes away any excuse not to listen to us.
Yeah.
You know, oh, well, I was driving, or I was in the elevator. Guess what? You can listen. It's not going to work anymore, ladies and gentlemen. Plug in, tune in, and turn on, and you're going to actually learn something here. Trust me, if you don't, you're not wanting to learn anything anyway.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I was thinking about that because, you know, Mexico had come out with their files, and Brazil, and Puerto Rico, and the UK, and what was it, France, and Norway, or Sweden. Anyway, there's been 10 or 11 countries over the last decade that's released UFO files, and still, we have nothing but secrecy.
Yeah.
And I get in trouble for this all the time because, you know, every time I hear somebody's going to read, I say, oh, it's a waste of time. It's going to be a bunch of sightings. It's going to be a bunch of this, a bunch of that. It's not that I don't think there's some good stuff in there. I really do. But I don't think it's going to be earth-shattering or it's going to change anybody's point of view as it stands right here. What do you think? Am I wrong or right or in between? Or?
No, I think you're right. The odds, the good sighting report comes out, and the media did pick up on the one with the fighter pilot in Britain in the 1950s who was, you know, told to shoot this thing down, and then the media goes and tracks him down and finds this guy old and retired and living in Florida and confirms the story. So that one sort of made news around the world and it got a lot of good play. So, I mean, there are the odd good one, and you never know what's going to go. Like, I have talking about these fighter pilots, I have one that I'm going to film this guy. And I'm going to show it at Ozark, and this is not just a fighter pilot. This is a NORAD guy who actually the guy who called the scramble. And this happened in Canada. This happened in the he will give me the exact date. I haven't done the interview yet, but in the 1960s, and scrambled jets, UFOs, watching them on radar. The things disappeared. The jets sort of came back. Then they reappeared on the radar. He called another scramble, and this guy was a NORAD guy in the Air Force 25 years, and is told me the whole story and has agreed to go on tape and tell this whole story about the Canadian scrambling jets to go after UFOs, and the whole thing was recorded on radar and all this kind of stuff.
Well,
so, you know, you get these stories, and there are good stories, but again, stories really don't really nail it down. You need the big one, and talking about stories, there's a rumor, this started yesterday, and my email box is jammed with this, and this is a story that I've been working on over the last day. This happened on Coast to Coast, and I've got part of it. There's actually a big bet going. Who can find the show first? And this is a guy that phoned into Coast to Coast, and one of the Coast to Coast people is in contact with this guy. He actually did leave his name and his details, and this guy phoned into George Norrie from Europe and said that he had been in an attic and he had found film of Eisenhower at a crash site and the bodies, the whole bit. And this, we know it was the week before February the 6th, because George Norrie talked about it on a show on February the 6th. So this has been going back and forth, and there's a bunch of Larry Bryant is involved, and Jerry Pippen, and Ron Reger, and a bunch of people, and everybody's, I've got my... probably the researcher who gets the least credit in the world is Giuliano Marinkovic from Croatia. And I would bet he's going to find it before anybody else, because he's a very good researcher, has all the shows. He's working on this, and we're trying to track this down. We're trying to get George Norrie's Tommy from the show to tell us to detail what this guy. Now, the story will be probably that it didn't happen. It's not what people think it is, but that's the kind of stuff that we're taking the chance, and we're trying to track this story down. Of a guy who claims to have a film with Eisenhower at a crash site. And so it might not turn out, but the only positive thing about the thing was that the guy did leave his information. Like, usually if it's a crank call, the guy's not going to leave his real phone number. And apparently this guy did leave information that he can be contacted back at. So we'll see what happens. That's the kind of stuff that whoever's controlling this thing really can't control, where you may get something like that, where you've got a somebody who's actually got film and got something that, you know, you can't dispute.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we have a huge European audience. Guys, if anybody out there listening knows anything about what Grant just said, y'all can write to me. You can write to Grant. I'll get him to give you an email in a minute. Y'all should know mine by now. UPRN@Cox.net or ICAR@Cox.net, ICAR@Cox.net, or UPRN@Cox.net. Come on, guys. Those are real easy.
Yep.
Grant, tell them where they can reach you, because, you know, we do have a big audience in Europe.
Yeah, presidentialufo.com is my website, and presidentialufo@presidency.com is my web address. And anybody who gets in there, will sort of link them on this chain, and they can actually watch the story as it unfolds. We've actually tracked it down to the February the 6th show, where George Norrie said the guy has phoned in within the last week. So we know it was somewhere in a week before that period where this phone call. We're trying to get the actual, it's apparently a minute-long phone call with George Norrie, and George takes him off the air and gets his details. But here's this guy telling a story that, if it turns out to be true, I mean, is something that we waited 60 years for. But, you know, you've seen these stories, and you've heard the rumors and stuff, and it turns out to be something different. And but we're tracking it, and it's only been going on for 24 hours, so if anybody gets an email to me, I'll put them on the list, and they can actually watch as people try to figure out this story and who this guy is. And there's emails every couple minutes. There's somebody making a comment, raising the bet as to what the bet's going to be, what people should be paid who can find this guy, and it's actually kind of interesting. But
dang, these people are hostile to MUFON. Not yeah, MUFON will make it disappear. MUFON will make sure we won't find it. Guys, now look, I know I give MUFON hell. Okay, I know I do. I'm guilty of it myself. But there are some good people over there. There are some people over there I know work for the government. But there are some good people over there. So let's do this. If we got to hate on them, let's hate on them halfway, okay? Because really, there are some guys. Come on, I started out at MUFON, all right? You know, that's where I learned to be a field investigator. That's where I learned to be, you know, learn too. So you know, now of course I was back with Walt Anders and stuff. But you know, and James is trying. I mean, I've talked to him a few times. I just feel like they've been infiltrated to the point now that I don't know if there's anything can be done for them. It is kind of a shame, but, you know, anyway, we're not here to talk about them anyway, and like I said, I got a bunch of friends over there, so I don't want to pick on them anyhow. Sometimes I do.
you have to research your researchers, whether they're in there or whatever, that the people get together, and to me, it's like if somebody's got something I need, I don't care what organization they belong to. I'm willing to talk to them and, you know, go along and play the game, and as long as I'm, you know, making some headway on what I think is important. So, you know, I work on that story, and I'm also working on the one I've been working on last week. Been chasing down is this story, and this is a story I've had on my website for a number of years, but now I've got some more details. This is a story about these two women who claimed that their father, who was a minister in Ohio, had been shown bodies in 1939 underneath the Capitol by Cordell Hull, who was longest serving Secretary of State for President Roosevelt. And I've now got their names, and I've actually tracked down nobody really bothered to try to do it. I actually went to the Roosevelt Library and said, well, do you have, apparently there was a letter that comes, there's a video on the internet, if you search it, you can Google search and find this video of these two ladies, and it's very impressive, because these ladies have got to be in their 80 years old, and they're talking about this story that their father, who was a minister, told them about the bodies and being shown this by Cordell Hull, who was the cousin. And it's very impressive when you see these old ladies telling a story. It's not like some clown kid telling the story. And so I actually went to the Roosevelt Library a couple days ago, and they've actually found a letter from Roosevelt to the minister, which was a form letter asking for advice on a certain policy that Roosevelt had put out. But the letter from the minister back to Roosevelt, and this is the guy who's telling the story about the body. So here's, you know, it's been in the library all these years. Nobody's ever asked to search to see whether there was any connection between this guy and the president. So that's another story that it kind of fascinates me, because even though we have a lot of stuff where stories don't check out, or you get just citing reports when you get material, there still are an awful lot of crash saucer reports. And I think that to say that all these people are lying is going to be a mistake, that there really is something to this crash saucer stuff. And so I try to track down as many, try to get as close to the initial witnesses as possible, and you come up with some stuff that actually does check out. There's this one, and then I don't know if I told the story, I don't know when the last time I was on your show, but a story that shows you what, to me, is significant evidence. And that was, for example, Carey and Schmidt put out their first new book on Roswell. Now they've got an updated version, but when they put out this book, this is about a year and a half or 2 years ago, there's always these stories at Roswell that the president has sworn people to secrecy. There was two of them. There was one guy who was the marshal at the site, in charge of security at the crash site, and he had been telling his kids that he couldn't talk about it because he had been sworn to secrecy by the president. So of course I'm the guy who checks the president's stuff, and I was at the, you know, check out the library, and there's no indication that this Easley, I think guy's name was, had ever talked to the president or had ever you know, done anything, and so the story didn't make any sense. So I contacted the authors of the book. And I talked to Carey, Tom Carey, and I said, what's the deal about this story about the president? I've checked, and the witnesses that you say were sworn to secrecy by the president, there was no contact with the president, no letters, nothing in exchange. And he said, well, they were telling the story that they were sworn to secrecy by a Secret Service agent of the president. I said, well, tell me what the Secret Service agent's name is, and I'll check it. So they gave me two names. The one didn't check out, but the other one, his name was Gerald McCann, spelled with two N's on the end of it. Very weird spelling. And this came up right away. Within an hour, this was the name that they claimed that Gerald McCann, Secret Service agent for Truman, had been in Roswell and been swearing people to secrecy. And one of them was the guy that was the head of the security at the crash site. And I went back and checked, and sure enough, Secret Service agent from 1944 to 1952 for Eisenhower, Gerald McCann. It's just unbelievable. And that's the kind of stuff, when you see that, you go, There's reality to the story, that you would have the president's Secret Service agent in Roswell telling people to shut up and swearing them to secrecy on behalf of the president of the United States. Yeah.
See, things like Roswell and Betty and Bernie Hill get me in trouble all the time. So well, no, because, you know, see, I got issues with any crash. First off, if it's the Grays, I don't know why they would, because they can take your damn car and bring it up in their ship and drive around, take it to the building. So, you know, for me, I have a fundamental issue here. If we have a crash saucer that we didn't crash, okay, because I think a lot of these crashes are actually technologies we have that we've crashed, whether they were gifts from the Greys or stuff we recovered from the Germans or what have you, okay. I really think that we've crashed a lot of these. I don't think they're extraterrestrial, but my issue always was, okay, if E.T. crashed on the planet, okay,
yep.
And they're visiting the planet like they are, I can't see why they would let us be in possession of, first off, their actual physical cells. And secondly, any advanced technologies that could enlighten us in any shape, form, or fashion, knowing how dangerous we are.
Yeah.
So, I take issue with that, but I'm going to let you go ahead in a second. And
okay.
Then the other thing is, well, no, go ahead, and then we'll go ahead and finish that.
No, I realize that, and I've said that, and that's what John Alexander says, is that if there's all these crashes, they have a quality control problem. The aliens.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, how can they be crashing all these saucers all over the place? But the other issue I look at is, you get this situation where the Secret Service or these two old ladies where you look at the actual interview where they're talking about this, and I remember this is a story I really haven't told. What was his name? Habib Azadadal, who was Henry Victorian. He was famous in the 80s. He was in the UFO field. He was claimed to have been Iranian intelligence. And I knew him very well, and he was involved with a bunch of very bizarre things, And he at one time told me he'd been involved in a crash. And he was, and when I published the book UFOs, MJ-12, and the government, he was going to provide these documents. And he had me convinced near the end that he did have these photographs. And he told me the story about him and this German guy, and they were looking for flowers. It was a long story, and I knew the background about the flowers. He'd been arrested about these, all this sort of stuff. But my thing was that there's so many witnesses. When you take a look, especially at Kerry and this sort of stuff, there's so many stories and there's so many witnesses. And when you start looking at the witnesses, it sort of occurs to me that it's very hard for me to believe that all these people are misinterpreting what they saw on the ground, or that they're making it up. So that's why I still pursue the crash things, to take a look at. There's got to be something to all these people telling these stories.
Well, no, and I agree there's something to it. And I do find things like when it comes to cat and mutilations, and Linda and I argue about this all the time, but I do think there are a few of those that may be extraterrestrial. But I was watching a show called Trinity and Beyond that the government did about the different nuclear programs we had.
Yep.
Well, they were showing in some of the places how they were testing the animals. Come to find out, all the cattle parts that are missing are parts that they would have took while checking for radiation. Now, besides
right.
this, and these are key important things, all the ones that I have personally checked into, the cows were insured. Okay? The cattle was actually insured. And when I talked to the ranchers myself, they said they saw black helicopters, not UFOs. So, you know, I took issue with this. I mean, first we got cattle that are insured. Well, that sounds like the government. Okay? It truly does. I mean, ET's not going to care if your cow's insured, but the government will, because they know. The government knows if they come and take one of your cows and it's insured, but you're not losing anything, and more than likely you're not going to bitch much because, well, frankly, the cow's covered, you know, so there's no big loss. Now, and I found that just really odd and really interesting, but then there were some other things. When I was watching Trinity Beyond, they were talking about the testing zones in the western part of the United States. Come to find out, 99% of all the cattle mutilations that happen inside those zones.
Yeah.
So for me, that's too much, you know, too much circumstantial evidence. More than likely, the government had a big part in cattle mutilations. Now, I'm not going to ever rule out that ET might have came and got some cows. I just won't, because I do have some pretty good witnesses that told me they had seen UFOs present, not black helicopters. So I'll never rule it out completely, but I really think where Linda Moulton Howe made her mistake was that she assumed all of them were ET, when I really think probably 80 or 90% are U.S. government. Because you got to understand that U.S. government's never going to tell you that they're testing places like Denver or New Mexico or Arizona for radiation contamination, because they're going to get the daylight sued out of them. You know, they'll never admit to that. So the only way they can really do it is do it on the sly, because any other testing than that suggests that they're guilty. You know, and, you know, everybody, you remember Love Town? Everybody sees. You just can't have that. So I really think there you've got some stuff that, you know, is probably ET, but I think a lot more of it is just Uncle Sam monitoring all those years of underground explosions in those states. And what I found interesting is there was a cattle mutilation not far from where I live in New Orleans. This was really odd, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It was about 8 years ago, and it's north of New Orleans, about 40 miles in Mississippi. Well, I was like, well, what the hell? You know, I've never heard of one east of the Mississippi River, by the way. And I'm like, what the hell? Come to find out, there were 3 nuclear bombs tested 50 miles north of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that was like the icing on the cake. You know, here I found an oddball cattle mutilation east of the Mississippi, and the only thing I could find that it had in common with the ones west of the Mississippi is it was near a testing, you know, underground testing facility. And so that kind of told me right there that, you know, probably some of these are ET, but I would go to wager that our government has a lot more to do with this than the aliens do. But that's what happens. Everybody just assumes stuff, and they just go off in this rant, and they don't look at anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and because I like Linda. Linda and I get along real good, and we've had many heated discussions over this, trust me, because you know she's defending her idea.
Yeah, oh yeah, I know Linda well.
And she's got some good points, and she drives a hard argument, and I tell her that all the time. I'm like, so Linda, I'm not trying to tell you that ET's not getting them all. I just feel like, you know, because of this evidence, which you can't deny, this evidence is here, you know, it doesn't fit in with the ET scenario, so it's got to be something different. And she hates to admit to it, because it makes her mad as hell, but she does, and it's just funny. But it's one of the things that bothers me, because I see a lot of researchers, not you, but I see a lot of other researchers out there that do that. They just start jumping. You know, they see a little smoke, and they notice some kind of fire there, but instead of finding out what kind of fire it is, it just snowballs. And And like the crashing, I do think in some places there's some validity to it. I'm not sure why there is, because I just can't understand a race that can cross time and space crashing on our planet. I could, mind you, if this was something new, that only happened in the last 40 years, to say, okay, maybe one or two or three might crash coming in because they're just learning how to get here and blah, 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 blah. But for me, this is a 6,000-plus scenario. So, the kicker part is, in the last 50 years, there's been 100-and-something crashes. Well, there's been as many abductions today as there was 6,000 years ago, but there wasn't 100 crashes back then. And then if we cross the whole 6,000-year span, that means there should be, what, 600,000 crashes or 60,000 crashes. And there just isn't. So, you know, I got to kind of take, well, wait a minute now, something 2 and 2 is not making 4 here. So I agree. I think there are something that happened in some occasions that bring them down, whether it's accidental or whether it's something they gave us or something we've learned or what have you. But to the extent that most researchers say how many that are crashing, they would actually have a worse flight record than the FCC does. I mean, the FAA does.
Yeah, and that's Alexander's argument.
You know, so I'm not going to ever rule out, Grant, I'm not going to rule out that they may have dropped one or two for whatever reasons, mechanical problems, coming in hot, something didn't work as they were approaching the planet. I'll never rule those things out because I know, as the bumper sticker says, shit can happen. You know, in general, I'm just, if they're that poorly designed, then they're not that big of a threat to us. But when you talk to contactees, they don't seem to be that poorly designed. Their craft seem to be very well designed, and they don't really seem to have any stress. And I will tell you this. I've had more than 100 contactees ask their contactors if they had crashed the crash at Roswell, and I always get the same answer. No. Always. And you know, so it bothers me. And it's one of the things we first started doing with contactees is programming them to ask questions when they're picked up, and reflective questions. I mean reflective, but automatic questions, so that it's without thinking about it. When they're picked up, it's programmed. It just comes in. It pops into that gray's head. The gray answers it usually without thinking about it. Sometimes there's even repercussions for it, but it works really well. And over the years, we've gotten a lot of good information that way, and a lot of confirmed information that way. So, you know, but I got to say this as well. In a bunch of these cases, we just asked, have you ever lost a craft or had something go down? And the answer was yes. So the answer for Roswell was no, but then the overall answer was yes. So.
Yeah.
You know, I can't, you know, say that nothing happened at Roswell because I wasn't there, but it's just odd for me that they're willing to admit that something happened, but they're not saying it was Roswell. Then another friend of ours and another fellow researcher, Gilders from France, made a point to me. He said, you know, Joe, maybe it wasn't an advanced craft. Maybe it was a shuttlecraft or a scout craft or a cargo craft for that matter. He said maybe the Grays on board were cargo handlers, and the craft is a cargo handler, there would be no reason for the Grays to worry about it or even want to retrieve it. You know, he said it would be an antiquated piece of technology to them. Even though it's advanced to us, to them, it's antiquated technology. And the members on board are probably not knowing anything top secret or anything, for that matter, that would advance us technologically. So there's no real reason to retrieve it.
Yep.
That kind of hit home, Grant, I got to say. That kind of hit home. So for me, maybe there's crashes, but maybe it's not these advanced craft that are flying around abducting people, but others. Craft, cargo, you know, whatever, shuttlecraft running back and forth between the big ships and or the bases or what have you. But that made more sense to me, you know.
Yeah.
And Gildas really, you know, drove that home. It did make more sense for me. So, like I said, I can't rule out that something's going to crash on the planet. I just, when they tell me 100, and what was the last time they told me 126 crashes in the last?
Yeah, well, that's John Alexander's argument. They got a quality control problem.
Yeah, you know, and I tell. No, and the damn name has slipped my mind. The one who put the Vegas conference on.
The Vegas conference? You mean Bob Brown, the Laughlin conference, or Vegas? Ryan Wood.
Ryan Wood. Wow, I could not remember his name. He's going to just smack me. I don't know why I couldn't remember his name for the life of me. Dude, I had a good time at his conference last time I was there.
Yeah.
You know, I told that to Ryan. I'm like, Ryan, I said, that's just too many crashes, man. I said, I'm just. There's no way. And I said, there's no way our government 100 years ago would have even known what they had their hands on.
Yeah.
I said, God only knows what could have happened to them for even trying to retrieve it. So I said, you know, I just take issue that, you know, maybe one, maybe five, you know.
Yeah. But Ryan does have the point that's the kind of stuff that if you do manage to confirm something, get a film or get something hard evidence, that's the kind of stuff that really ends the game. Yeah, I mean, it sort of advances things that the government is for their hand is forced.
Yeah, it is, and it's a good point because it will force their hands. I'm just curious because, you know, I, like I said, I can't rule it out. Most of the crashes that most people tell me about, I don't think that's what they were. I think there's other explanations for them. And, see, I'm a ufologist, but I'm kind of a more hardcore ufologist than most. I'm a lot more skeptical, I should say, than most of them are. And that's simply for the fact, because I have a rule. If I can come up with a feasible alternative explanation, then I think the research really needs to be looked over. Because, you know, I'm not the brightest guy on the planet by any means, and I figure if I can come up with a feasible explanation, then it's probably an alternative explanation for what happened. And it's just one of those things. It doesn't mean you're right or wrong in anything. It just does. I'll give you a quick example, because I see Zan's got his hand up. He's been waiting patiently, like, the whole show to get a question in here. But a couple of years ago on Coast to Coast, I introduced a new theory about Betty and Barney Hill, about what happened to them in the United States. See, I didn't know at first about Betty and Barney Hill had an experience in Canada. I didn't know they had lost a whole day of time in Canada, and when they stopped to ask for directions, one of them said it was a black policeman, one described it as a white Irish guy. Now, I don't know how you could misdescribe that much, you know, looking at the same person, but they couldn't even name what hotel they were or where they stopped and had breakfast that day in Canada. That actually sounds like an alien abduction. Mm-hmm. The case in the United States where four guys with flares on the side of the road flagged them over, pulled them over, and then walked them over to a craft, brought them on board. They were in black uniform with black duckbill caps. That sounds like military abduction.
Yeah.
And I really think the investigators really screwed up on the Betty and Barney Hill case. And I have to say, in general, since I introduced this on Coast 4 years ago, it's been steadily picking up steam, because when you work it, you know, explanation for explanation, criteria for criteria, it's a much better explanation for what happened in the United States to Betty and Barney Hill. And people get mad at me all the time, writing, well, you know, they were contacted. I said, I didn't say they weren't contacted. I said, I think they were abducted in Canada, and then when they came back over the border, I think the United States government grabbed them, like they do in the lab from time to time, to see what they could learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that's what happened there. And I know it makes a lot of people mad, but you know, if we can't correct our mistakes when we make them, then why even get into the field?
That's right. That's right.
You know, and they get mad at me, and I'm like, guys, it's a better theory. It's more plausible for what was said was happened, and I do believe there are abductees, and they were abducted in Canada. I just think the U.S. thing was a military experience, and I don't know why this is. I guess because the case is so old, and there's been so many big names sign off on it that it really irks people. But you know, most people, when they sit down and let me go through it, evidence for evidence, no, they agree. They're like, oh, no, you actually, there's no way to actually argue away from the point. There's too much evidence in the favor of MILAB versus alien abduction. And then, I'm very fortunate, I have the entire set of regression tapes, the entire set. Mm-hmm. See, Kathleen Margin told me nobody had them. I said, well, I got them.
Oh, my goodness.
I said, and I sat there and thoroughly listened to them, and nowhere in any of the tapes do they mention extraterrestrials or even the word extraterrestrial.
Mm-hmm.
Barney always describes them as military. Always.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand where the alien thing came from. Betty describes it, but that's in Betty's dreams. That's not in her regression.
Mm-hmm.
And that could have just been left over from her contact in Canada. So I really think they messed that one up. But that's what I'm talking about. You know, people won't go back and correct themselves. Or they won't even take the time to go back and think, well, maybe we didn't get this right the first time. Maybe this is something other than what we thought it was. I don't have to worry about that with you, because you're going to go at it in 50 different angles. Well, you are, and that's
and you just, and
I
you
like
just put out what you've got. If you've got something, you put it out.
Yep, and if
and
you've
it'll all get sorted out in the end. It's when you hold back the stuff you've got. If everybody were to put what they've got on the table, we'd get a lot farther.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I'm as guilty as everybody. I do hold some stuff back as far as abduction research that we do. I won't lie about that. But I hold that back more for us, so that. Because I noticed, you know, and some of my researchers have been giving me hell the last 3 years, because in the last 4 or 5 years, I've released quite a lot of what we call abduction criteria. The problem with that is in the last year, we've had a big influx of people that turned out not to be contactees, but were very well versed. I mean, for a while, you kind of thought, oh, yeah, well, they've been listening to one of the radio programs.
Yeah.
Or listening to one of the chat rooms or something, or reading the sites. And so it's making it a lot harder for us. So I decided, you know, well, we've given out enough of the candy. We need to stop right here. And because I would like to disclose everything, but then I wouldn't have any way to really know who was telling the truth.
That's right.
Wasn't.
Yeah.
So, I'll stop right there, and I leave like the government stuff to you and a few others out there that are doing it, and I'll stay out of that. I defer to your judgment on this a lot, on a lot of things. People ask me, grants there, or, you know, because some of them want those. You know, see, the exopolitics thing gets me. I love Steve, and I love Alfred, and I love Michael, and sometimes it drives me crazy, though, with the, if we're going to make friends with the E.T. thing. I'm like, oh, you've already contacted E.T.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, we're not like that, Joe. I'm like, yeah, we already contacted
E.T. Yeah. I know what you're
saying. I'm sure I drive them crazy, too. But,
yeah.
You know, it's one of them things. But, you know, let me grab Zan's question since I've been here chit-chatting. Zan, you ready? You got your hand up? I know you've been, I see you've been patiently waiting, man, just sitting there. Look, I'm going to drop the mic. You pick up the mic, and we should be able to hear you fine. So, Zan, you're live and on the air with Grant Cameron.
Justice for Bill Clinton came out in 1997, released a book called Friends in High Places, and he's the one that basically stated that Bill Clinton told him, and Bill, he'd worked with Hillary at the Rose Law Firm in Little Rock, very close friends with Bill, grown up with Bill, all this sort of stuff, and Bill had said, if I put you over there in justice, I want you to answer the, two questions. Are there UFOs and who killed JFK? So Hubble put this in his book in 1997. And so the day that the book was released, the White House press corps was in a press briefing with the president's press secretary, and of course it was Deborah Orne from the New York Post. And of course she hated the Clintons and was quite willing to ask the question. She said, Mr. Hubble writes in his book that Bill Clinton wanted him to go out and look for UFOs. Is this true? And the press secretary was able to walk around the question and said, no, we gave that to the alien. This was this Weekly World News alien, as he's referring to. That was his job. We gave that to him. So everybody sort of laughed. She came back with a follow-up question. She said, is what Mr. Hubble writes in his book true? And again, the press secretary came over to one. He had quite a few press secretaries. Evaded the question for the second time. And later, I found in a book, Deborah Orne was interviewed about this. And Deborah Orne said, I sat there and I waited for somebody else to follow up with another question, and the rest of the press corps rolled over and played dead.
Oh yeah.
If you're a Washington top reporter, and we've seen them because I've done the National Press Club thing a couple of times, you're going to basically get the little reporter. You're not going to get the one time the big Washington Post reporter came in there and just sort of hammered the X conference, just ridiculed the whole thing. But you're basically going to get the minor reporters, the big reporters. If you've spent your whole life working your way through, Toledo, Ohio, up into the White House, and you're a White House press person, the last thing you're going to do is ask a stupid UFO question. I mean, you want to be cool. It's the respect thing. It's like you don't want to touch the issue. So of course they want to go after if Jeremiah Wright is talking in the national press room. That's a big story. That's something that's acceptable. You could talk about it and run with the story. But the UFO thing, and I've been in these National Press Club sessions, there's basically two reporters and a bunch of people from the X conference and stuff. It's just not a subject that you're going to win a Pulitzer Prize at this point doing that kind of story. So they just don't want to touch the story. It's a thing that, you know, you're a cool reporter. This is not the kind of story you want to do.
Yeah, and that's just sad in itself. You know, it really is, because some of the speakers that's been at the X conference were definitely well worth listening to. But you know, it's like when Stephen Greer did when he did the release. What was that, May of
2001?
Yeah. when he did it, you know, you thought it was going to get better press than it did. I mean, the first day I've seen a little clip on CNN and a little blip. Actually, wait, I reverse that. I've seen a little blip on my local news, and then about a day later I've seen a little blip on CNN. And that's all I saw, and I was kind of like, well, hey, isn't this just cute and sweet? And our local paper didn't even pick it up. Nobody I talked to really had seen anything about it, because I was asking questions all over. I was doing Wake Up at the time, and I was like, guys, did anybody see anything? Anybody hear anything? They're like, no. It just kind of faded away. And he had some pretty solid witnesses there. You know, I don't always agree with Greer, because, you know, I think he does some crazy stuff sometimes, but he definitely had some really good, solid, hard-hitting people there. And, you know, some of the ones with some of the degrees and or some of the security clearances they had, you would have thought the big press would have at least been interested in hearing what they said.
Yeah. And even, let me just tell you another story. Even when they're interested, they don't run the story. When I filed all the Freedom of Information Act requests with the Clintons, because I knew how the game was played, and I knew when the thing was going to be open for Freedom of Information Act, and I knew it was first come, first serve, so you get in the line in front of everybody else. So I filed this 100 Freedom of Information Act requests, and out of the first 18 sets of files released from the Clinton Library, 11 of them were UFO files. So, of course, everybody's waiting for Hillary's because she's running for president. Everybody wants to see Hillary's files, and you have, all these different groups. They want to hammer Hillary. They want the dirt on Hillary and where she was when Monica Lewinsky was in the Oval Office and all that kind of stuff, you know. It was the big story. But when 11 of the first 18 files released were UFO, all the major news media were very interested. It was like, why are these UFO files coming out of the Clinton Library? So I got calls from Associated Press, I got calls from Washington Post, Fox News, and like, for example, the Washington Post talked to me two times, and the total conversation was probably an hour and a quarter, at least, that I talked to the Washington Post. And I referred to them to the two documents that showed that Hillary Clinton had helped edit this letter on UFO disclosure to the president, and the fact that Rockefeller had gone to her office, all this sort of stuff, and her name was in these actual government documents talking about UFOs, and they were all very interested. I sent them all the documents, and nobody ran with the story, and it's still the old deal. It's like you may have interest, you go through the whole thing, and it goes to the editor, and the editor goes, not a chance is this going in the newspaper,
and
kills it.
And, you know, that's something else. I noticed this, you know, I kind of noticed this in the last election with Kerry and Bush, and I noticed it even more in this past election. I had noticed it with Gore and Bush, too, but CNN seems to have become they're not a biased news media anymore. They seem to have their own agenda, and they seem to be backing particular individuals, and I noticed, like, during the whole Obama campaign, they ran the story about the Russians invading Georgia for 2 days.
Yep.
And Obama dropped so far down in the point, so far past McCain, that they stopped running it. And they didn't talk about it again until he was elected.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, that's not right. I mean, it's not biased news. You know, they're just reporting the news however they want. And I've noticed that a lot in the last couple of years, that not just them. I mean, I'm picking on CNN right now, but it's not just them. I've noticed that a lot of the newspapers and a lot of the media are reporting news how they want to. They're not reporting the stories.
Exactly.
They're picking up something, and then they're changing it to whatever they want, and they're reporting. And there used to be accountability for this, and all of a sudden there's no more accountability in our news medias. And, you know, it was like the day of, I was watching 911 on, you know, I had like eight different stations going, and every station was reporting something different, or nobody had it right. Mm-hmm. And since then it's been pretty much the same progression, and it's like, well, you know, CNN's a multi-million dollar. You know what? You know who I watch for my news in America now? BBC America.
Yeah.
I do, because they report the news biasly.
Yeah.
There's stuff that they've been talking about that's been going on that the Canadians knew about and the Brits and all knew about, but the Americans ain't heard it because it ain't been reported in our country.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm just kind of stunned. I'm thinking, what the hell, man? What's going on with the news media? But they got their thing, and you know, and CNN and a couple of other medias really, you know, got this dance going on with Obama, and they're protecting it. And as much as they can now, they're having a lot harder time with it now. Actually, they've been catching a lot more flack. Even CNN's been catching flack lately about, you know, oh, he's been backsliding and backtracking while they are reporting it, so they're having to, you know, because they do have Glenn Beck and what's-his-name on CNN, and they're not going to put up with that.
Yeah, there is agendas, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is, and it's kind of sad. I mean, you know, I know there always was. It just seems like when I was younger, in my teens and 20s, that the news was more about the news. You know, report, whether it was good or bad or indifferent, it was about the news. And today it's not about the news. It's about how many people can we get to watch? Who are we making mad? Are we politically correct? And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, while I'm on this politically correct thing, America has become too political correct, okay? We have come to the point that we are morons now, all right? Political correctness has been taken to a level that was never, ever intended to go to. If everything's going to always be politically correct, you're going to always offend someone because someone's never going to agree with your view. So we need to kind of grow up a little bit and act like adults instead of like children that have to be slapping our hand every 2 days. But anyway, I'll say that. I'll tell you what I'll do. I will invite Grant Cameron and Richard Dolan on one day because the three of us all have distinctly different political views, and I'll invite them to Demi's show. And we'll have a knockdown drag out about who the hell.
Love it because I love Richard Dolan.
Oh,
I know.
I
love
Richard,
that.
Richard's great. Oh, I'm making crazy though because we got distinctively different views on politics. You know, he's like, Joe, that is not how it is. I'm like, well, that's how it is in my world. But you know, he knows it's just a debate, which is great because he can debate with him. He doesn't get mad, you know. And cause some people get really mad when you don't agree with their politics.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, somebody say, oh, well, you're a Republican. No, I'm not. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm an independent, and I vote my conscience. And it's been hard to vote my conscience in the last 16 or so years. I got to be honest about it. But, you know, still, I vote my conscience. I don't vote any other way. But I know we're getting ready to run out of time here. Let's get some sites in, some plugs in, where we're going to be again and where they can find you and locate you.
Yeah, my website is presidentialufo.com, and I also have the HillaryClintonUFO.net site with Paul Robinson. And with Paul Robinson, we also run the BarackObamaUFO.com website.
Before you go get too far, Stephen said y'all were doing something together or working on something together.
Steve?
Yeah, didn't.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a secret. You have to wait for the.
Okay. I'm just being nosy. Yeah, you wouldn't tell me either.
You got good insights there, but.
Okay, I won't say nothing else. We'll let go and finish what you said.
Yeah. And I'm speaking at Ozark April, the week before X Conference, okay. Whenever that is. And I'm speaking, the one I'm looking forward to is Roswell, because I've been to Roswell, I've been to the museum to do a research there. And I always wanted to go to the big circus at, July 4th. Love the American July 4th thing, and that's the big thing at Roswell, so I'll be there. And speaking there, I don't know what yet on, but it'll probably be the president's. And so those are the two big events that are coming forward in the next couple of months.
And then you, where was it, Ireland?
Ireland. October the 4th, I think, where I'm in.
Yeah, because we've got a nice-sized audience over there, and so I just wanted to know, guys, I'll go check him out. Grant's really nice. Look, he put up with me for like 4 hours. The man is a saint, I'll tell y'all. Y'all don't go pester him, okay? I was just trying to get some information out of him, but y'all don't go pester him unless you got something legitimate. Paula was laughing about that when she was on the show one night, and I said, look, y'all, Paula's very approachable. She's very nice, but don't just go irritate the woman. She's like, Joe, and I'm like, well, you know how they are, Paula. There'll be 50 people knocking.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, y'all just go up and talk and be nice. But, oh, Grant, oh, by the way, I was looking at your site again. You got it. I've noticed this in ufology in general in the last year or so, because it's always been like this. You have a really nice, clean site. It's just clean. It's smooth. I was looking, scrolling down. I love this little cartoon, by the way, too.
Yeah, I like to put the cartoons. I actually had, at Ozark one year, I had a collection of cartoons. I had probably 1,500 UFO cartoons, and they ran on a PowerPoint out in the lobby. Where it was just UFO cartoons from the last 50 years, I spent a lot of time collecting them. So I like the cartoon thing. There's a funny aspect to ufology. You can't take it too seriously sometimes.
And I agree with that. You can't take it too seriously. You got to kind of roll with it and I do. I make fun of it. I get in trouble for it, though, because I tell them all the time, ufologists don't have a sense of humor. But I'm the black sheep. I enjoy it. I have fun.
Yeah,
but I hope to see you down in Roswell, because I got to say, for the 6 years, I had a really good time down there. They treated us like gold. They took excellent care of us. They took care of the staff. They were just great people. We ran in between. I know there were some hard feelings between the museum and the conference itself, but everybody was very cooperative on both sides down there. And it was a lot of good speeches, and I had a lot of fun. I really did. I'm going to try to get down this year because I just like to go, and I like to go down and harass Guy Malone, too.
Yeah.
He's one. Him and Joe George, I love harassing Joe George. Joe, if you're listening tonight, you know you're just a no-good SOB, right?
Yeah.
spreading them lies and rumors on the internet. Oh, look, you'll be cussing me for weeks. No, Grant didn't say that. I said that. I'm not blaming that on Grant. That's me. Oh, I just can't stand Joe Jordan. I can't. I think he's just an insane SOB. But he waited last time until I left Roswell to talk about me, the big chicken. I told him, I said, you could have waited. I said, I'd have come got up on the stage with you. No. He didn't want to do that, though. But, Grant, I want to tell you thanks for being on. You are always a great guest.
I appreciate your interest.
I was hoping I'd see y'all at XCOM. See, I'll have to get on Steven when I see him. Because you're always a good addition to the XCOM. See, like the XCOM, you should just always be a regular speaker there because it fits into what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
You know, it really does. And I even curtail what I'm speaking about this year because it is the Exopolitical Conference. And so I'll keep in theme of what he's doing. And because personally, I'd like to just talk abduction for hours and hours and hours. But
yeah, I had the chance, but I'm going to be at Eisenhower and Truman Library right after the Ozark thing.
Okay. I was wondering, that's cool. You'll be gathering information, and I'm really looking forward to the Ozark thing. Hopefully, I'll get up there too and come up and visit y'all. And it sounds like it's going to be.
You won't be disappointed. I can guarantee that.
No, it sounds like it'd be a fabulous conference, and I like where it's at. I was looking on the internet while I was talking to you, and I really like the location too. I like this kind of location. It's
beautiful place.
It's kind of out of the way and kind of gorgeous up there. But anyway, we're going to get, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to UFO Undercover. Now, Grant, again, thanks for being on. You're always a fantastic guest. You're always welcome back. If you ever got anything you want to get out to the audience, just let me know and I'll have you on. Again, ladies and gentlemen, I hope y'all enjoyed the show tonight. Also, for the person who just wrote me, both the Michio Kaku interview and the Neil deGrasse Tyson interview are both on the archive site. I know somebody who was at James asked me that earlier. Yeah, they're both on the site. You can go listen to them, check them out. I know, huh? Michio Kaku on a UFO show. Can you believe that, huh? I know. I think that's something else. Y'all can thank Linda for that. Anyway, we're out of here tonight, guys. Thanks again for tuning in, everyone. Enjoy your life. Have some fun. Smile. See y'all next week.
Thank you.